What do you think about Amber, Gabby?
It's just crummy quality. That's the only thing, is that those people, you know, I just don't like the way they, because they know there's a market for anything.
You're not getting much out of that, I shouldn't think.
You don't get anything out of that.
It's
more pathetic. But, you know, I mean, it's not the point. The thing is that even if we'd have owned the tapes, you see, the thing is, we didn't want the tapes because it was like, it's like, say, this microphone now. Say somebody's the other side of the hall over there singing. You're going to pick up a little bit in the distance, but it's not exactly a record.
Start with a little quiz. I'm going to play an early recording by a band I'm certain you know. See if you can guess who it is. Okay, let's see if you got it right. That's the Beatles, recorded at a rehearsal in Paul McCartney's home in 1960. Ringo hadn't joined the band yet, and Stuart Sutcliffe played bass. In 1960, the same year this recording was made, the Beatles went to Hamburg, Germany. One of the young people who saw them there was a photographer named Astrid Kircher. What led you to go hear the Beatles in the first place when they were performing in Hamburg where you lived?
Well, the first time I met the Beatles was to my former boyfriend, Klaus Forman, who saw them one night when he was wandering around Hamburg. And then he heard this beautiful sound of rock and roll music, and he went down into a quite dark, filthy cellar where these boys were standing on a very, very tiny stage and performed in such way that he was absolutely, let's call it, knocked out by the music and by their looks and everything around it. So he told me about it, and it took him a couple of days to convince me to go with him to see the boys, because the Reeper Barn is not a place where young ladies in the 50s or 60s were to have seen or go there. You know, it was not a nice place to go. But one night I just said, all right, I come with you. And so we went there, and when I went down the stairs and looked at the stage, I was just amazed how beautiful these boys looked. And being a photographer then, it was a photographer's dream. In fact, it was my dream, because I always thought to, I would like to take pictures of young boys who looked like them. So, and then when I heard the music, it was even more fantastic for me. So ever that first night, I went nearly every night to see them. And that's how it started. Had these, I don't know what you call the hairstyle, you know, like the rockers did in the 50s, like Marlon Brando, on with a lot of grease. So, and they wore really mad clothes, sort of not very clean, but unusual. Like John had a leather jacket on, and Stuart had a real proper suit jacket on. They were so individual, every one of them tried to be stylish in their own little way, because they didn't have any money at all. So they made the best out what they had. So John had a pair of jeans on, which he rolled up, which was very trendy then. And Stuart had a very, very pointed shoes. And so I've never seen anything like it before. So that was always my dream, to take pictures of people with character and a charisma. And there they were, all five of them looked absolutely wonderful.
They're seated on like a metal frame of, I don't know if it's a building or a car, and it's labeled Hugo Haas Hanover. What are they sitting on? And then maybe you could describe this pose.
Well, it is a lorry where the people from the fairground transport their equipment with. And of course, there are a lot of big iron things where they do their carousels and things, so that is where they are sitting on.
Mm-hmm. Now you have it's such a nice pose. I mean, there is because it's like an iron frame, there's like four separate parts of the frame, and each of the Beatles is posed within one part of it. Several, two of them are standing, three of them are sitting on the frame. Paul's holding his, everybody is actually holding their instrument.
Yeah.
And Pete Best is standing in front of his drum kit. And it's a really cool looking shot. How did they feel about you posing them? Because this looks posed. It looks like you said, you sit here, you sit there.
Yes, well, as I said, told you before, my English wasn't very good then. So I just went over and grabbed their heads and put them in the direction I wanted them to look. And I told them to sit up there and hold the instrument. And so it was a real sort of, it was a composition, of people.
That just, it's so long ago, we can hardly remember, it was something to do with Paris and something to do with Hamburg, and we're not quite sure now, because there's so much been written about it, even we've forgotten, that's true. We just
have to read it up to find out.
Yeah, well, they just make it up about the hair now, but it was something sort of happened between Hamburg and Paris.
Now, you described when you first met the Beatles that their hair was greased back.
Yeah.
How did you change their hair?
Well, my boyfriend Klaus had a big problem, and because his ears used to stick out, but in any other way he was the most beautiful boy the world has seen. So I thought, how can you get this to go, these big sticking out ears? And then I had the idea to just grow the hair over them, which he then did, and it looked absolutely beautiful. So when the boys saw Klaus, Stuart was the first one who said, oh, I would like to have that hairstyle. And because their hair was very long, I could do it in one night, which I did, and Stuart was the first one who performed on stage with the so-called Beatles or Klaus haircut.
Yeah, I never heard it before referred to as the Klaus haircut.
Yeah.
So how did the other Beatles decide to pick up on the same style?
When they finished playing in Hamburg, they went back to Liverpool, and I visited Stuart there. And then George came up to me and said, could you please cut my hair like Stuart's? So I did that, but the other two didn't want to know about it, John and Paul. And Pete couldn't have the hairstyle anyway because he had curly hair. So George had beautiful hair and it went absolutely great when I cut it for him and he was all pleased. But a little bit later, John and Paul went to visit an old friend of ours, another German photographer called Jürgen Vollmer. He used to live in Paris and was assistant to William Klein, a very famous photographer. And Paul and John visited Jürgen and he persuaded them to have their hairstyle changed. And so they came back from Paris looking like the rest of the Beatles.
To Stu Sutcliffe, who at the time when you met him in 1960 was the bass player in the band. You seemed so taken by all of the Beatles. What special happened between you and Stu Sutcliffe?
Well, it's very strange and maybe it sounds sort of sentimental, but when I saw him for the first time, I knew that was my man. You know, he was and still is the love of my life, even though he's gone for such a long time. But I never ever, and I was married a couple of times, met another man who was so fascinating, so beautiful and so soft and well-mannered, you name it, and that he was. And so such a gifted artist.
Seems to me you both lived in a very visual world. I mean, he was an artist who learned to play bass so he could be in the Beatles. And you, of course, you know, were a photographer, a very visual person. So even though you didn't speak each other's languages at first, he's English or German, it seems like you must have had this visual connection.
Yes, there was a sort of bond between us because maybe I correct you there. Stuart just played in the band because John persuaded him to be in the band. And the first painting Stuart sold, John persuaded him again to buy a bass for that, to be in his group. So actually all Stuart wanted was to become a good painter.
Why did John want him in the band? Why did John want him in the band so much, knowing that he didn't know how to play?
Well, because John always said when Paul was moaning about, you know, how Stuart didn't practice and all that, but John always said it doesn't matter, he looks good. He is rock and roll.
All right.
Stewart was a very special person, and he was miles ahead of everybody, you know, as far as intelligent and artistic feelings are concerned. He was miles ahead. So I learned a lot from him. And because in the 60s, as you may know or read about, we had a very strange attitude towards being young, towards sex, towards everything.
Are from 1964, when they were shooting A Hard Day's Night. How did you end up with them?
Well, the magazine Stern in Hamburg, maybe you know the magazine, the chief photographer there was a friend of a friend of mine. And so he knew that I was very close to the Beatles, and he asked me if I could sort of act as a door opener for him to take pictures of the Beatles. And because at that time, when they did A Hard Day's Night, Brian Epstein stopped all the press activities and no photos were allowed to be shot then. So I phoned George, and, you know, George was always my sort of guardian angel, and told him about it. And he said, okay, you can come over if they pay you for it. Otherwise, you can stay at home. So I went to the Stern and told them, and they gave me quite, for the 60s, quite a good amount of money. And then we went over, and George sent a chauffeur, and they picked us up from the airport. And I stayed with George and Ringo then, at the time they were making the film.
I see. Well, thank you, and you'll receive your 3 shilling fee at a later date.